Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
Robert Dubois. He's in prison for putting Superman in the ICU with a kryptonite bullet.
I'm not joining your suicide squad.
We'll see.
My court date is coming up. And Miss Waller said maybe you could help me out.
You're stretching in your door!
Everyone stand down.
Miss Waller, I don't...
Stand down!
I wouldn't take such extreme measures
if this mission weren't more important than you could possibly imagine. Are you in or out?
Good. Let's meet your team.
It's okay, I'm not okay.
Each member is chosen for his or her own completely unique set of abilities.
That's the trailer of the movie The Suicide Squad. You go to a superhero movie and you expect to see heroes, but what if the heroes are villains? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to review the movie, The Suicide Squad. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
Introduce us to The Suicide Squad. If we haven't discussed them before, where do they fit into the comic book universes?
Well, we have talked about it before. We talked about it in 2016. There was a Suicide Squad movie by David Ayer, and this is kind of the sequel to that, and it has some recurring characters. This is a DC product, so this is not Marvel movies, but there is a little bit of connection because this time around, the director of this film is James Gunn, who people might remember as the director of Guardians of the Galaxy Volumes 1 and 2. You may also remember that he kind of got let go of that position over at Marvel with Disney because of tweets and things that he had said, which were kind of reprehensible, bad stuff. But somehow he fell back on his, landed on his feet with this Suicide Squad sequel, and looking at IMDb, he's set to work on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 back with Marvel and Disney. So what this franchise is it's based on some comic books from before, but the idea is that you have this character of Amanda Waller who works kind of for, quote-unquote, the deep state, I guess, and pulls together Black Ops task forces, Task Force X, I guess this one's called, to go and do clandestine, covert, CIA kind of level work around the world or even domestically. But what she does is she pulls together incarcerated supervillains from the DC comic book universe and conscripts them, recruits them into her little groups. That's why it's called The Suicide Squad, because the missions that they're sent on are kind of suicide missions, that there's no expectation that they might come back, and plausible deniability is part of the story, and they're using these unhinged, broken villain characters kind of as anti-heroes or protagonists within the story to go do X, Y, or Z. So this is kind of the primer for what Suicide Squad's all about.
What does the plot of this particular film bring us?
They get sent to this Suicide Squad. They pull together a new kind of group of people. So it's kind of a revolving door, rogues gallery of different characters. And they're sent to this little South American island off the coast. And this little island is going through a political upheaval. So this Corto Maltese, it's a fictional little island nation, it's going through political upheaval. They're having a military coup. And this is not good for the American government, or I should say the kind of deep state of the American government that's been involved in experimentation down there, that's a scientific experimentation. So they're really being sent in to mop up any details of American involvement in the experimentation that's been going on that island. And it's kind of one of these kind of stories where they've built up this kind of idea that, you know, there was these Nazis after World War II that got to this island. They did this research. The American government at some point took advantage of this when they found an alien from outer space, this star-shaped alien. And in that place, they were working on, you know, these experiments. And to get subjects for these experiments, the local government just took political dissidents, people that disagreed with them, and sent them and their families in there to be experimented on. And then this new regime is going to do the same, but they're anti-American. So the Suicide Squad's being sent in to erase any information or evidence of American involvement in this project. And that's basically your plot. So what happens then is, you know, these different characters are kind of put together and they play off of each other, and you get some character interactions and things like that. They all have their own reasons for agreeing to be recruited into this Suicide Squad, this little task force X that goes and does this work. And that's some of the interesting part, I guess, of the film.
So they're anti-heroes. And you note that movie audiences naturally gravitate towards sympathy for the protagonists. They're the protagonists in this film. Is that why you say that this film is an exercise in postmodern moral relativism?
Yeah, I think it is, because the idea, like, people just root for the whoever seems like they should be in the position of the hero, they'll root for them, even if they are not actually heroes. And this is the tricky part about watching a film like this. And I think that people need to kind of be reminded that they are on a bit of a sliding scale. Like, these are all unhinged characters. So, for example, some of the characters, the one that is a recurring character that's been in both of these films and has been in additional other DC films playing the character of this Harley Quinn is played by Margot Robbie. And she's had a number of films. We didn't talk about the Birds of Prey film that she was in that kind of focused on her a little bit even more. But she's an unhinged character. So she's this sort of anti-hero. She's a psychiatrist that became the girlfriend of the Joker, but she's really a broken individual. So you're watching it and you kind of start to root for her. And then James Gunn and Margot Robbie, with her portrayal of the character, really like pull the carpet out from underneath you and say, no, remember, she's actually crazy. Like, she's a dangerous individual. There's this kind of side plot where she ends up dating the new president of this little island, and she's had an amorous rolling around kind of sexual exploit with the guy. And then she just goes, oh, wait a minute, you're actually a bad guy, and I know what I need to do with bad guys in my life, and she just kills him. And you're sitting there going, yep, no, she's not actually a good guy character, right? And it's a reminder inside the film that these aren't good guy characters. You could also look at it and say that there are a couple of characters. There's one that's kind of like the heart and soul of the film, is this character called Ratcatcher 2. And, you know, they all have monikers. These are kind of like your rogues gallery of criminals. So, you know, this Ratcatcher 2 is a very kind, nice, empathetic character who controls rats and seeks to have friendships with people and wants to, you know, she's kind of she's like the daughter, kind of surrogate daughter to like the leader of the team, this character Bloodsport. And, you know, she's very nice, but she's also a armed robber, right? So you have to kind of remember that as you go. A lot of the characters are given these very complicated lives and the kind of thing that would garner sympathy. But, you know, like, it all has to be kind of looked at. And listen, some people have seen this film and other people haven't seen it. People who have seen this film are going to say, listen, are you taking all of this too seriously? Because it's the focus of this film is that it's kind of like a big budget version of a B-grade film that's, you know, got a lot of, I'm using air quotes, humor. And it's got comic book, you know, pizzazz going on. Maybe it's not meant to be taken too seriously, but But at the same time, I think all of that is kind of a veneer on top of an actual story that's being told. So I think you can both look at the kind of pop culture splashy kind of end of it, but at the same time, look at what is underpinning the story. What are the characters actually, who are the characters in this, and what does this all mean? And what is the story that's really being told here?
So I want to explore that a little bit. These aren't just anti-heroes in the sense that there's some sort of redemption arc for them. They've gone off the tracks, then they're given a second chance, one last gig or something like that to redeem themselves. That's a pretty common trope in film. This is something different. How is it different?
Well, I think that it's different in that, like, there is a couple characters that are have a little bit of that in there. But at the same time, I think that for the Christian watching this film, for instance, all of this is really based on, like, works righteousness. So this is, these characters only become kind of quote-unquote noble, I guess, based on completely what they do. They are given an opportunity to maybe do something a little different. And it seems like the tipping point for them is the idea that these experiments are happening on children and they don't like this. So a couple of them decide, we don't want to do this. We don't want to be covering up for the United States on this kind of thing that's going on, right? And that's a part of it. But then at the end of the film, I'm going to ruin a little bit of this. We always end up with some spoilers. They have an opportunity. They could take that information, what was going on there, and they could get it out to the people in the world to know about it. But instead, the character you've been rooting for, because he's the main protagonist, right? This character of Bloodsport, he decides instead to use that information to blackmail the people who sent him on the mission so that he can get a second chance and get away from everything. So they're not actually, over and over again, they do things that seem redeemable, and they have, like, kind of civic righteousness in certain moments. They're also brutally violent. Sometimes they're merciless, and they're not necessarily very nice people. But because there's jokes and it's pop humor, fun kind of quote-unquote stuff, it kind of just hides the fact. You have to actually think for a moment, who are these people being set up as kind of heroes / anti-heroes to the general audience? And I'll just add into this, because James Gunn made the Guardians of the Galaxy films, which are similar in nature in the idea that you have these criminals that kind of band together and end up kind of doing good things, right? The similar sort of idea, but the difference is that that was like PG-13, maybe. I can't remember exactly, but it was not an R-rated film. This Suicide Squad film is an R-rated film. It is unabashedly an R-rated film. Interestingly, in Canada, it's not rated R. In Canada, it's rated 14A. In Quebec, it's a little lower than that. But as a result, I'm sitting in the movie theater, right? And afterwards, I get up to leave, and there's like 7 and 8 and 9 year olds there. This is like a super R, hard R-rated film. You know, it's got some nudity in it. It's got brutal, grisly violence. And if people think to themselves, well, we went to the Guardians of the Galaxy as a family, and it's the same director, and it's a comic book kind of thing, and it looks like it's all flashy and fun. It's like, this is not the same thing. Like, this is definitely two different kinds. There's similarities, but it's not fun for the whole family, let's say, right? But there's a danger in all of that. So I think that in a way, for like James Gunn, it's going back to some of his roots. Like, he started out with Troma pictures. I don't know if you ever, like, back in the 90s, I remember watching like Tromeo and Juliet and the Toxic Avenger, and that was from the 80s and stuff like that. Like, they're definitely a gross out B-grade schlock horror action film company, and he started out with them, and he even has an Easter egg in here. That's what this stuff is like. This is not your run-of-the-mill average. Maybe it has more in common with things like Deadpool or like a movie like The Cabin in the Woods that Joss Whedon wrote, things like that. It's not going to be for everyone. And I think that there's this misanthropic kind of angle to it because of the nature of the way the violence is played off as humor. It doesn't land as humor. Now, I realize this is subjective, but as a film goer, when I sat in the theater and watched it, it was more winces than chuckles. And then you start to think to yourself, well, why am I being asked to laugh at this? So there's that element of all of it kind of percolating throughout the whole entire film.
We are reviewing the movie The Suicide Squad. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Does he pull the violence off as punchline or as character? We'll answer that question next. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is a new resource for children ages 8 through 11. Luther's Small Catechism for Kids contains colorful icons and illustrations to help guide children through each tenet of the Christian faith. Learn more about Luther's Small Catechism for Kids at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. An easy-to-use resource for teaching the faith in a simple way, Luther's Small Catechism for Kids.
In all things, across the nation, children are back in over 1,800 Lutheran schools. Students are thriving in programs of excellence in safe, caring, Christian environments taught by dedicated teachers. To find a school in your community, visit lcms.org/schools. Contact a school today for information about a Lutheran school for the children in your family. That's lcms.org/schools.
Holy Cross Evangelical Lutheran Church, Albany, Oregon, is a mid-Willamette Valley LCMS congregation where the liturgy lives and God's people worship as one, with sound biblical doctrine, weekly communion, and a clear confession of Christ crucified for the sin of the world. Please join us at 2515 Queen Avenue Southeast or visit our website at www.holycrosslutheranalbany.org.
If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Those words of Jesus have been the motto of Concordia University Chicago for generations. We build our education on the Word of God, the only sure foundation for learning. I'm Dr. Adam Francisco, Dean of the College of Theology, Arts, and Humanities at Concordia Chicago, and I invite you to visit us to discover what it means for God's Word to become the foundation of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
At the center of our campus is Kramer Chapel, and there's a reason for that.
Issues Etc. guest, Dr. Arthur Just.
Because it is the heartbeat of Concordia Theological Seminary. It is where we go to hear the voice of Jesus and frequently be fed with the body and blood of Christ. We sometimes call it our Jerusalem. Kramer Chapel points to the classroom, which we sometimes call Athens. It is there that we do theology, biblical studies, systematic theology, practical theology, history. We love theology here, and we love the study of it, and we love coming together in worship. It's one of the things that gives us great joy. Joy in worshiping, joy in studying theology. Concordia Theological Seminary is all about the joy of being in Jesus.
Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, ctsfw.edu. We're getting a review of the movie The Suicide Squad with Pastor Ted Geese. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're connected to Issues Etc. Church banners, greeting cards, Christian jewelry, fine art, housewares, chrismans, baptism, and confirmation certificates. You'll find all of these items and more at adcrucem.com, ADCRUCEM.com. Ted, we were talking before about the violence in this film, The Suicide Squad. comparison we might make is to Quentin Tarantino, the Kill Bill series, or really any of his films. They're gratuitously violent, but he somehow keeps the audience from that cringe moment. Does Gunn do the same?
Well, yeah. Also, like Quentin Tarantino, like Inglourious Basterds would be another one that has similar moments like that in it, where it's, I guess the idea is this kind of like uncomfortable moments that where the cathartic release is to laugh, maybe. But I think the other part of it is, and again, like this is somewhat subjective, but I don't feel like Quentin Tarantino is a misanthrope. Like he doesn't seem to hate people. And there's this niggling kind of feeling that James Gunn is like not as nice a guy as Quentin Tarantino. Do you know what I mean?
And Quentin Tarantino is not a nice guy.
No. So anyway, so there's that kind of part of it. And like, it's not like this is the first James Gunn movie I ever watched, or I've never seen a Quentin Tarantino movie, or I've not watched challenging topic matter before. But I think that there's this disconnect that goes on, because on the surface, it's so comic booky and stuff, and it is well made, and the actors are doing a good job, and the direction is good, but it's kind of just, it's a layer cake, and there's filling in there that is not the frosting on top, if that makes sense.
So we've discussed it already here a little bit, but the violence here is definitely not PG-13. This is not for kids. You say not even for most adults.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of adults are not going to like, let's say you went and saw Saving Private Ryan, and that opening sequence, which was just, you know, very brutal. If you saw that movie and you're like, yeah, you know what, I'm good. I don't need to see other films like that. Or maybe, like, I remember we talked about Mel Gibson's Hacksaw Ridge, right? And Hacksaw Ridge was one of these movies where you started out and it was like this kind of romance story between this guy who is a conscientious observer who then ended up in the military, and there's just, as soon as the battle started, then you're like, oh yeah, this is a Mel Gibson movie, right? Because there's random violence, right? Like random, like moments of like extreme violence that doesn't follow this kind of romantic notion that sometimes happens narratively in films, where you lead up and you build the audience up and you let the audience know in advance what's about to happen. But it's just the randomness of violence that actually happens in the battlefield, and it's jarring. And you think to yourself, "Oh yeah, we're back in a Mel Gibson movie here." So with James Gunn, I mean, he's been doing some of these kind of PG-13 movies. Now he's doing an R-rated film, and he just goes for it when it comes to that kind of stuff. So if you, as a film goer, have seen some things in the past, and you're like, you know, I don't need that. I don't want to see somebody's face be shot off or something, then this is not a movie for you. Like it's just not going to be. And then the icing on the cake, as it were, to, you know, return to that analogy, is that sometimes that bleak, grisly, the face of somebody being shot off is used as the punchline of a joke, or is intended, it seems like it's intended to be funny. And that's like disquieting. If that's the intention, then he's doing a great job, because it was disquieting. There were moments that were uncomfortable for me as a film goer. You know, maybe I'm just getting sensitive in my old age. I don't know. But definitely that was part of this film going experience.
Any redeeming qualities with a few minutes here?
Yeah, you know, there are some things that I think are interesting. I kind of alluded to the idea that there are some character interactions and stuff that are interesting. I mentioned this character of the Rat Catcher 2, and she's called Rat Catcher 2 because there's a Rat Catcher 1. So one of the things is that she's like the daughter of a guy, and the guy was the guy who came up with this way of like controlling rats and rodents. She has this flashback, and it's kind of an important kind of pivotal thing for the film, where she's remembering being a child and she's living on the streets with her dad. Her dad's played by Taika Waititi, the director, who's also an actor sometimes. And the little girl asks the father, "Why rats, Papa?" And her father says, very tender-hearted kind of moment, says, Rats are the lowliest and most despised of all creatures, my love. But if they have purpose, so do we all. So for me, that kind of made me think in the moment as I was watching it about what Jesus says. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny, and not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father, but even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. That's from the Gospel of Matthew. So this idea that, you know, like even these blatantly horrible criminals could be of some value is part of the story of this film, right? So then when you start to think about that in the context of the film, then I started to think about other things in scripture where you've got like God using actual villains or enemies of the children of Israel to a particular end or for a particular reason. And there's this kind of passage from Habakkuk, the first chapter, which kind of twigged in my mind. And I went and I looked it up, and I've included it in the review, but I'll give it to the listeners here too. And it goes like this. They all come for violence, all their faces forward. They gather captives like sand. At kings they scoff, and at rulers they laugh. They laugh at every fortress, for they pile up earth and take it. Then they sweep by like the wind and go on, guilty men whose own might is their God. And God is using them as the Chaldeans as a way of punishing Judah for unfaithfulness. So in the same sort of way, you've got these villains being sent in, the supervillains being sent in to a place to deal with other villains. They're being sent by villains. Like everything is this is all kind of like bad, but they're being used for a purpose, to stop the continuation of this experiment and the mind control and all like the vivisections and all of the terrible things that are going on. They're being sent for a purpose, and they succeed against expectations. In fact, there's this one little moment in the film where one of the most crucial and unsung heroes, back with the analysts who are kind of like doing all of the Googling and Google Maps stuff for them and telling them where to go and what to do, when Amanda Waller, who's a reprehensible character of her own, played by Viola Davis, wants to explode the heads of these criminals, because that's the leverage she has, is if you don't do what I say, they put something in their head to make it explode. I'm going to explode your head. One of these analysts gets a golf club and knocks her out. And then the team is able to carry on and like save the day. But that analyst is kind of a hero too, right? And they had already painted these analysts as uncaring, you know, manipulative desk jockeys that didn't really seem to care. So there's these moments in there where that's all kind of interesting stuff. So I would say that there are some redeeming, like some things for Christians to contemplate as they're watching it, but you know, that you got to get through a lot to get to those things. We'll put it like that.
You can read Pastor Ted Geese's review of The Suicide Squad at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
When we come back, Old Testament judge and prophet Samuel, will be talking about him with Dr. Andrew Steinman of Concordia University, Chicago.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we move farther along in Mark's gospel with a question about fasting, Lord of the Sabbath, healing on the Sabbath day, great crowds, and the 12. Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
In the last 14 years, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has experienced a 59% decrease in pre-seminary Concordia University enrollment and a 61% decrease in Lutheran teaching programs and similar decreases across the board in church work vocations. To answer this challenge, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has begun the Church Worker Recruitment Initiative. To learn all about this, pick up your copy of the August issue of the Lutheran Witness, where Dr. Bonnick talks about this. To subscribe, visit cph.org/witness or visit our website, witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you look at the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Theology for blue collar, white collar, and clerical collar. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.